We're on the top of Daf Ayin Ches Amid Aleph, the two dots. The last thing we discussed was Mochar Sadeu Mipnei Rasa, and this was the exception to the rule that Rav established back on Ayin Zayin Amid Beis, that if he's not Nofak V'Ayel Azuzi, if the Mocher who received the down payment is now running after the lokeach to try to get the balance of the payment, then it means that the mocher doesn't have a full gemiras das, and the kinyan is not irreversible, it's reversible. Which means that until the last zuz is paid, the mocher and the lokeach each have rights to back out of the deal and to nullify the transaction. However, the exception to that rule is the case of Mochar Sadeu Mipnei Rasa, if he was so desperate to sell his field because it was in such bad state, then we have different ways of interpreting why the Mocher is running around trying to get the Lokeach to pay up the last Zuz. But in this case, we assume that the Mocher is so pressed and motivated to sell his field that, you know, he's desperate, that he's willing to clinch the deal for whatever down payment the lokeach was able to pay up front, and he had a complete gemiras das, and therefore the sale is irreversible. The Gemara goes on to explain pshita and then yesh listapik. Pshita, says the Gemara, in the following scenario I understand very well that the kinyan is not complete, and that's a case of boil is abune bimea. He wants to sell a smaller field at a lower price of 100 zuz. Velo ashkach, he couldn't find a buyer for a smaller tract of land, and therefore he was compelled vizabin bimasayim to sell a larger tract of land for twice the price, for 200 zuz, v'ka'ayel v'nofik azuze. And he's running around trying to get the lokeach to pay the entire price of the 200 zuz for the karka. In that case, lo kani. Certainly, since this mocher was not really interested in this sale, he actually wanted to sell a different karka, smaller karka, but in the sense that he needed the funds, then he was compelled to sell the larger field. And the fact that he's running out after the most means that he really wants to buy a smaller field. And therefore, as long as the lokeach has not paid him the balance, the mocher has not received the full payment of Masayim Zuz, the kinyan is not complete. And the reason for that is because the mocher was not excited about this sale. He was really attached to the field, so to speak. It was chaviva olav, and he only had to sell the field because he needs the liquid assets to purchase a smaller tract of land. The fact that he hasn't gotten paid fully means that he's not yet settled in his gemiras das. That's poshut, and therefore lo kani, and both the mocher and the lokeach have rights to back out of the deal and nullify the transaction. Ella, but here's the case that I don't know about. This is the suffek. Iboy lizabuni b'mea. He wants to sell a smaller tract of land at 100. Velo ashkach. He didn't find a buyer, but he was a little bit impatient. He looked around the market, didn't find a buyer. But v'itara chavi mishkach. Had he really pushed himself and given it more time for thorough investigation, he would have come up with a kone for Lotar, but he didn't take that extra effort, put in the extra mile, so to speak, of effort and energy to locate a buyer. Vizabin Masayim. And therefore what he did was, he sold a larger tract of land for twice the price, for 200 zuz, v'ka'ayel v'nofik azuze. He's running to lokeach on a daily basis to try to get the lokeach to pay up the balance of the 200 zuz. My, what do we say in this case? Was the gemiras das, is the kinyan clinched, or is it not? Shall we say, kimocher sadeu mipnei ra sadami? that just like in the case where he sold a poor quality field, he was desperate to make the sale. Here too, the fact that he was not toreach to find a buyer for the sada ketana means that it wasn't a big deal for him to sell the sada gedola. Normally we assume that a mocher is not excited about parting with the field. You know, karka is the basic staple of finances. So the seller only sells a field, a piece of real estate, if he's desperate. Here, it seems to be indicative from the circumstances that surround the sale of a sada gedola that he wasn't really particularly interested, you know, attached to the field, but rather he sold the field somewhat quickly, without much hesitation, and without inhibition, not putting in the effort to try to stave off the sale by finding a buyer for the smaller field. And since in this case, you know, he's very nonchalant and laid back about the sale, then we can assume that he has Gemiras Das. It's not like the classical case of Isle Vinofik Azuzi where he really doesn't want the sale, he just needs the money and he hasn't gotten all the money yet. There we say Lokani, namely that he didn't really have Gemiras Das, he's not interested in the sale per se, he needs the money desperately. Here, he seems to be genuinely interested in the sale. He doesn't have any hesitation about parting with this larger tract karka, because if he did, he would have worked overtime to try to locate the buyer who would have purchased the smaller field. Oh, lo. Or shall we say no? There's no proof here that the mocher has no attachment to the field, no chavivus to the field. Even though he didn't make that extra effort to find a buyer for the smaller field, that doesn't really prove and demonstrate beyond question that the mocher is willing to part with the field. And therefore we assume that since he hasn't yet gotten his payment, and he's not Ayel V'Nafik Azuzi, he's trying very hard to get the lokeach to pay him up, it must be that he doesn't really have a complete Gemiras Das. Until he gets the last zuz, the kinyan is not clinched. Teku, and the Gemara says that this question remains unanswered. The Rambam apparently, as the Gaon points out, had a slightly different girsa in our sugi. Iboilahu zavin shavimana b'masayim v'ka'ayel v'nofik azuzi mai k'mocher sadeim ne'rasa domi olo teku. In other words, he purchased a karka that was worth mea zuz b'masayim. In other words, the lokeach went ahead and paid double the amount of the market value, and he paid masayim when it was really worth mea. The mocher is running around to get the money, and here we might be saying that this is like mocher sadeu mipnei rasa, where the mocher is desperate to clinch this deal because he got such a great deal. The lokech is paying him twice the price. And again, the reason why the mocher is running around to get the money is he wants to make sure that everything is set over here. And in that case, he has full Gemiras Das. Or shall we say, no, Shema Mechazer HaMochach HaDomim Neshlo Gomer Laknoso Achi Kabel Kol HaDomim. Now, the Gemara says the following. And here we're really starting this might be an introduction to a new sugya. And it's going to hopefully lead us immediately to the Mishnah here on Daf Ayin Chesem and Aleph. Socher es hachamor, the es hakador. The Mishnah had established that in certain cases we have what's called a dover ha'oved, meaning he hired, you know, the donkey in order to, or the donkey rider in order to make sure that he has, you know, very quick access to those utensils that he needs desperately, urgently now, frifrin and chalilim, lekala lemes, he needs polim to take the flax out of the mishra where it's soaking in a detergent. All this is called the Dovra Avod. And now Chazar Bahem. Now the polim decided that they're out of here. They want to quit. In such a case, the Mishnah establishes Socher Aleihem O Mat'on, which means that the poel has really seriously disappointed the balabayis. The employer is now in a hard-pressed situation where he has to find quickly and urgently workers to finish the job. And therefore, Socher Aleihem. The Gemara says, what does it mean, Socher Aleihem? Apparently, some of the money that now is going to be needed by the employer, by the balabais, to pay a replacement set of poalim to urgently do this job, some of that money has to be taken, or shall we say, subtracted from the monies that would have been paid to the first set of poalim who disappointed the balabais. But on Kama Socher Aleihem, to what extent, and is there a limit to how much money he would be allowed to pay and then bill the first set of workers? Amar Rav Nachman ad kedei scharan, which means that let's say there's a certain sum of money X which is owed by the employer to the workers. He can take up to, he can spend up to that price of X in order to hire replacement workers. Here, we have a comment of the Rush. The Rush says, let's say, for example, the balabais, the employer, has already paid the workers for the partial work that they did. Says the Rush, he can't take back his money that he paid them. But what it means, ad kedei scharan, is a reference to a certain sum of money that he, the employer, owes the palim, and he's holding back on that payment in order to hire workers to replace the first polim, in order to achieve and reach that goal which is so urgent. So the monies that he hasn't yet paid, that should be forthcoming to the polim for the half a day's work that they did, or half a job that they did, those monies can be withheld in order to beef up the deal and make it more attractive to the second polim, the set of replacement workers. And the first set of workers, insofar as in a case of a Dovra Avud, it's Yada Ala Tachtona, they'll have to forfeit their wage in order to pay the wages for the replacement set of workers. But again, the limit here, the sky is the limit. No, there is a limit. The ceiling, the maximum amount of money that can be subtracted or that can be held, that the first polim can be held responsible for, is up to the amount of money that the balabais, the employer, owes them at this particular moment. There's a comment here of Rabbeinu Tam, which is quoted in Tos Rabbeinu Peretz, Sheyochol liskar polam achem laseislam od tosefet al scharam kischum scharam shel rishonim. In order to entice the second set of workers, the replacement workers, by offering them a very high salary, says Rabbeinu Tam, the employer could offer them as much as a tosefet equal to the wages that were due to the first set of Paul. So let's say, for example, you hire the polim at 100, they did half the job, and now there is an outstanding debt of 50, the employer, in order to entice a second set of workers to complete the job and give them an incentive, because the situation is time critical, it's absolutely urgent, we allow the employer to take as much as 50, which is what he should be paying the polim, and add that to the going rate in order to, as a bonus, in order to attract a replacement set of workers. So in effect, what's going to be here is that the second set of workers are going to get double the amount of money that the first set of workers would get. And the Rabbeinu Tam adds the following comment. V'gove zos me harishonim. That in order to double the wages, the salary of the second set of workers, he can collect that money from the Rishonim. Which means, in effect, that he'll get his money back. If, let's say, he paid, the employer already paid 50 out of the 100 to the first set of workers, he can demand that 50 back in order to beef up the salary of the second replacement set of workers and entice them to finish the job. The Gemara says, Eisvei, Rava l'Rav Nachman. Rava asked Rav Nachman the following question from a braisa that's been quoted earlier on Daf Ayin Vav. There it says, Ad kama sochalem ad arboim v'chamishim zuz. There the braisa has set the ceiling of how much the employer is permitted to add to entice the second set of workers. That's up to 40 and chamishim zuz. We just finished saying that Rav Nachman was talking about Ad Kadei Scharan. These are two different shiurim. How do we reconcile this? Amoleis, Rav Nachman answered to Rava, Ki Tanya Hahi, that price is talking about a case of Shabasa Chavila Liyado. In other words, the Baal Bais has utensils of the first set of workers, because Polim bring their utensils to their work, the Kliyam Nosam, and they leave it there in the hands of the Baal Bais. So now the Baal Bais has these Kalim, these utensils, which have a market value of some significant sum. He can use it as a collateral, hold on to it. And then what he can do is, he could be Mosif Lepolim Achenu at Shivui Shel HaKelim. The Kelim sort of serve as a barometer, almost as a mashkan, how much money of the first set of workers is in the hands of the employer, such that now he can use those funds in order to entice replacement workers. And the answer is, he can use the funds up to the value of the kelim, the utensils of the worker, the first worker, that were left in the hands of the Baal Bais, of his employer. So there's a great chidush here in this braisa, namely that when the polim bring, and we're talking about the first set of polim, their utensils, and these are very expensive utensils, and they leave them on the work site, that indicates that the utensils serve as a mashkon, such that if the workers don't finish the job, and it's a davar avad, the Baal Bais is absolutely desperate to have the job done immediately, that's what he needs, he can use that mashkon in order to pay the subsequently replacement workers. And this leads us to the Mishnah here in the middle of Ayin Ches Amud Aleph. The Mishnah is going to address two issues, and they're related one to the other. The first one is the rental of, in this case it happens to be an animal, but again we could extrapolate to any sort of a rental, but the owner of the object that's being rented gave specific instructions to the renter as how he should use that object. And the renter went ahead and he violated those instructions. The other topic here covered by this Mishnah is where the renter was provided with an animal, and again, we can extrapolate this to other cases, like automobiles and so forth, and guess what? The animal is injured and can no longer provide the renter with the services that he needs, for which he's paying. Does he still have to pay for such a thing? And maybe it depends on who's responsible for this pegia, for this deterioration in the status and the health of the animal and its ability to work on behalf of the renter. So the Mishnah says as follows: Hasocher sachamar lo licha bahar. The deal was that the owner of the donkey in this case stipulated that the donkey should be taken up the mountains, and the holicho babika, the renter, decided to violate this agreement or this condition in the rental agreement, and instead of taking the donkey into the har, he takes the donkey into the lowlands, into the valleys. Or in the flip reverse case, the owner of the cow, of the donkey in this case, stipulated that the renter should be walking with the cow in the Bika, in the lower valley area, and Shina, and the renter decided he's not going to oblige the owner of the donkey, he's going to take it to Holicho Bahar. The Mishnah establishes, Afilu zu eser milin vizu eser milin, umesa chayav. Even if the distance within the har or the bika, those distances are the same. In other words, you can't fault the renter for overworking the animal above and beyond, you know, the purview, the parameters of the rental agreement. No, you know, the derech that he's going to traverse here, the journey is the same size. It's not longer. He's not extending that journey. That could be a real negligence. But nevertheless, even in the absence of that element, let's say that the har and the bika have the same exact derech in terms of its eser milin. Is if the animal dies, then chayav, in this case, the socher, the renter, has to pay because he violated the terms, the conditions of the agreement. And instead of bringing the animal to the mountain, he brought it to the valley, or vice versa. It's therefore the owner of the animal has a right to say to the renter, the reason why my donkey died is because it's not used to the air that either the air of the mountain or the air of the valley. And here there's going to be a machlokas rishonim in the case of Shina HaSocher, where the Socher violated the conditions of the maskir, and at that point the socher becomes chayev be'onsim, meaning even if the animal dies, which is a circumstance beyond his control, that's called ones, nevertheless, he, the socher, has to pay. Does he have rights to the dmei schirus? At least can he claim, okay, you know, I'll pay for the animal itself, as a mazik will pay a nizak, because I'm liable, having violated the terms of this agreement, and inadvertently cause the death of the donkey, but at least exonerate me from payment of the rental fee, because at the end of the day, I didn't enjoy any benefits, any services from this donkey, for which I'm obligated to pay rental fees. And that's going to be a machlokas rishonim as to whether or not we have a double whammy against the renter, against the socher. In this case, number one, he's chayev ba'onsim, and he has to pay as a mazik. And number two, that shinui does not exempt him, even though it led to the death of the animal, from paying rental fees. Or shall we say no? Other Rishonim will say, let him at least be exonerated from rental fees, because l'maisa befall, he didn't enjoy the benefits of this donkey. Why should he be paying for that? But he's nevertheless liable for the loss of the animal insofar as he did the shinui. The Mishnah continues and says, Hasokha sachamar lo licha bahar vo licha bibika im hichlika patur vi im huchma chayav. Again, the stipulation was that the renter would take this donkey up the mountain, and instead the renter decided to take him in the lowlands, the bika. And now, one of two things happened in causing the death of the donkey. Either A, the donkey slipped and fell, and as a result, died. Or B, the donkey died because of the heat. It was overheated and it died. Now, the difference is the following. If the animal slipped and fell and died, that's not something that can be attributed, or we cannot say that the cause was the renter. The renter is not at fault in any sense over here, because if the animal slipped in a bika, which is pretty solid ground, how much more so had he taken it up the mountain, which is very slippery, slippery slope? Certainly the animal would have tripped and died. So there's no way that we can pin the socher and say he's responsible, he's the cause of the death of the animal. However, if the animal slipped and fell, then the renter has to pay for damages, because quite clearly he was responsible for the death of the animal. Right? The animal, according to the agreement that was stipulated by its owner, was not to be taken up a mountain, and instead the renter violated that agreement. Let's talk about two cases again. In the case where the deal was to lead it up a mountain and the animal slipped in the bika, there he's patur. If the animal, on the other hand, died of overheating, it was exposed to too much heat, then the renter is chayav because he was meant to take the animal up the mountain, which is where the air and the heat is on a much lower level, meaning the temperature is much lower, and the animal wouldn't have died from overexposure to heat had the renter did what he was supposed to do. And now we have the reverse case, where the agreement was stipulated that the renter would take the animal into the valley land, and instead he led it up a mountaintop. And there the exact opposite is true. Then im hechlika, then the renter is held liable because he was meant to take it to the bika, and instead he took it to a very slippery slope. He's certainly the cause of its death. But huchma, if the animal was overheated and died, and what can we say? That the renter, instead of taking the animal to the bika, he took him up the mountain, then why should the renter be held responsible for having caused the death of the animal? It makes sense that that by taking it up the mountain, it might slip and slide, and therefore chliko chayev. But there's no reason to say that up the mountain, the animal should have died of heat, and therefore in that case, im huchma potur. The valley is where it gets very hot. Up the mountain, of course, it gets cold. That's why if you go to the Swiss Alps, then as you get higher and higher, you see more and more snow. In any event, the assumption is that had the renter taken the animal as he was meant to, then the animal would have died anyway. In other words, in the case of Hechlika, the animal would have died anyway. In the case of Huchma, then we have reason to assume that the animal died. So again, in the case of Hechlika, the animal died because he took it up the mountain. But in the case of Huchma, where the air is cooler up on the mountain, clearly it wasn't the renter who was responsible for the death of the animal if he took it up the mountain. Because if he took it up the mountain where the air is cooler, why should the animal die of overexposure to heat? Now, Tosfos explains that our Mishnah is in effect mekil with as a reflection of a sugya back on Daf Mem Dalid of Tchiloso B'Pshia. In other words, Tchiloso B'Pshia is only chayev if somehow that Pshia was a gorim of the onus. And that's what we call Pshia gorim leonis, or onus haba machmas ha-Pshia. Now, let's just figure out in the case of Leholicha bebika v'olicha bahar. Now, there's a pshia element here as far as hachloka is concerned, by taking it up the mountain. At the end of the day, there was an ones because of huchma, even though the air on the top of the mountain is cooler. In such a case, we should activate the principle of tchiloso bepshia v'sofo ba'ones. It was tchiloso bepshia shemetachlik Vitamus. It was sof bonus because of Chuchma. And there is someone who says Chilas Mashiva sof bonus is Chayav. But we're going here in this Mishnah, reflecting the shita that holds he's not chayiv unless the onus in some way could be attributed to the pshia. In other words, had he not done the pshia, the onus wouldn't have happened. But here, even had he not done the pshia, had he not done the shinui, the animal would have died. Because take a look at it, the animal died of the heat of the har, which is a cooler place. How much more so would it have died in the heat of the bikkur, which is a real hot place, you know, it's a real greenhouse. So that's called an onus, which is in no way is machmas hapshia. And therefore, Tosus says, everybody agrees in that case, that you're potter, and you don't apply the principle of tchilas of hapshia, v'sofa bonus chayev. Then the Mishnah says, v'yemesa machmas hamala, if we have reason to believe that the animal was struggling to climb the mountain and get to the top, and as a result, it got all heated up, and then it died, chayav. And that's because, in this case, the shinui, meaning he was instructed by the owner, lo'licha bebika, and he was molich bahar, he took it into the mountain, and up the mountain. Now, the animal is working overtime, struggling to climb the mountain, it gets very hot, the body of the animal gets very hot, and it dies. Is that a result of the fact that the socher, the renter, did not do what he was told to do? Had he left the animal in the bikkur as he was instructed to, it never would have overheated by exerting all this effort. It's only according to the Man Yomer who says that the mitzvah, I wouldn't call it a mitzvah, but the requirement of the socher in this case was to take the animal in the bikkur, not to overexert it by have it climb all the way up this mountain. The animal gets overheated by its work and its toil in climbing and then dies. Here, clearly, it's the socher's liability for violating the conditions that were stipulated by the owner of the chamor, the mask. And finally, the Mishnah tells us, as we mentioned earlier, what happens in a case where the socher is provided with a chamor that cannot work? And what's the case? Hasocher sachamor vihivrika. Subsequent to the schirus, to the beginning of the rental agreement, as time went on, the animal lost its eyesight. There was a swelling of the pupil, which makes the animal blind. And now it's very hard to work with this animal. That's case number one. Oshanases angario. Subsequent to the beginning of the rental deal, the animal was confiscated for service to the king, by the officers of the king. And now, once again, the renter is unable to enjoy the benefit of the animal. Is Omer lo, the maskir has a right to say to the socher, Harei shel chol fanecha. Look, I offered you a chamor in the context of the contractual agreement, rental agreement. Now, it's true, the animal now is blind, but you can still have the animal carry, as a beast of burden does, the tremendous heavy weights that the human being cannot carry, just that the animal doesn't know where to go because the animal can't see. The balbais is now going to have, the socher, the renter is now going to have to take the animal by the reins and guide it. But the animal is still functioning and still carrying the weight. And therefore, it makes sense that the rental agreement has been fulfilled. That's what the maskir is claiming. Alternatively, in the case where the animal, after the rental agreement was in effect, was now confiscated by the Avodas HaMelech, who's conscripted to work for the king. In such a case, again, what happens is that the king is going to take this animal for a certain period of time. It's a limited amount of time, and then he's going to return the animal, in this case, back to the renter. So, although the renter, for the time being, has nothing to use, he doesn't have a donkey to use. The donkey's been confiscated by the Avdei HaMelech, but nevertheless, the renter is going to wait until the Melech will come and return the object. It's not a thief, and therefore, in the meantime, he doesn't have to give him a second chamor to replace the first chamor. know, sometimes when you give your car in for fixing, you know, a tune-up job, then the mechanic says, here, take this car, which is mine, and use it as if it was yours until I finish the bedikos, you know, until I clarify exactly what is going on over here. And basically what the issue is that during this period of time, until such time as the Avdei HaMelech return the cow, or in this case the donkey, the renter has not been able to enjoy that. So there's a postponement of his ability and access to the service of the chamar. The chamar is working on behalf of the melech, not on behalf of the socher. But that's not the maskir's problem, because the maskir still is able to say to the socher, look, you have a donkey. Now you don't have the donkey, you'll get it back. Okay, that's your problem. I'm not responsible for that. You know, I wouldn't say you're negligent, but maybe it's your bad luck, if we could say it that way. However, again, all this applies only because the renter has some benefit from the blind donkey, or the renter will down the line have benefit from this donkey that's been confiscated for the Avodas HaMelech. But what happens in a case where the animal is completely out of commission? Mesa o nishbara. Now we're talking about the fact that the socher spent X amount of money for the rental of a donkey, and he doesn't have a donkey. The donkey died, or the donkey broke a leg. So in this case, can the maskir turn to the socher and say, look, I provided you with a donkey, albeit you'll have to put in some extra effort, you may have to wait a long time till it's returned to you from the Avdei HaMelech, but you can work with it, you can live with it. But here, the donkey is absolutely worthless. Is then, the Mishnah says, Chayov lahamid lo chamor. This is like you have an insurance, you know, corporation, and they say, if you got into an accident, we'll give you a rechev lachalifin. You know, in the meantime, until we can service your car and bring it back to shape, take this little, you know, two-door Volkswagen, you know, this little teeny Beetle, and run around with that. But in any event, it's the fault of the maskir for not providing the socher with a workable animal, and therefore the maskir has the responsibility to replace that animal with a different animal in order to collect any sort of rental fees. Now, before we get to see Emirtz Hashem the Gemara, I want to make a few points. Number one, the animal is not totally blind. In other words, there is some sight left to the animal such that you can guide the animal and lead it in such a way that it can fulfill its task of carrying these high burdens. However, although in the case of blindness, the animal is still what we call Re'uya Limalacha, if the animal is totally blind in a way that can be demonstrated, the animal is of no use whatsoever and cannot function even in a partial way on behalf of the renter, then it's exactly like the case of Mesa or Nishbara, where the owner, the one who rented out his donkey, would have to replace his donkey with a different donkey because the animal is totally blind and is not functioning properly, or the animal is lost. And That's number one. Number two, I just wanted to point it out, there's a whole discussion here amongst the Rishonim and the Poskim about the case of the animal being confiscated by the Avodas HaMelech, which is a temporary blockage, meaning ultimately the animal will be returned, in this case, to the renter. Would the renter in this case have to pay for the Dmei Schirus on those days in between? In other words, he enjoyed, you know, the animal serviced him for a week, and now the animal was confiscated by the Avdei HaMelech. In such a case, if the socher has another 3 weeks of schiris on the deal, but now after a week's time, he doesn't have the donkey has been confiscated by the Avdei HaMelech. Let's say, for all intents and purposes, the donkey is returned 2 weeks down the line, in which case the renter gets full benefit, full service for that last week. But the 2 weeks in the middle, the socher didn't get any benefits from, because the animal was somewhere, you know, in the hands of the authorities. it was being conscripted for the Avodas HaMelech. So can we or should we demand payment from the renter even for that period of time that's sandwiched in the actual work that he gets with the animal? And at the end, the actual work that he gets with the animal, sandwiched in the middle, is the absence of the donkey. It's just not to be found. It's not accessible as far as the renter is concerned. It's been taken by the Malchus. And that remains a machlokus amongst the Rishonim. Now we're ready to start the Gemara on this Mishnah, and we're on the bottom of page Ayin Chesam and Alf. The Gemara asks, Mishna Reisha de lo kamaflig, Mishna Sefer de kamaflig. The Reisha makes a general statement without qualification that if the animal died after the socher has violated the terms of the agreement, then the socher has to pay for the liability because he was Mishana, and it makes no difference apparently whether the animal slipped and fell and died, or whether the animal was overheated. But yet, when we see the Sefer says that it's got to be Ketzad. Mesa, how did it die? And that's going to be relevant. Im Huchlaka, Huchma. Amri Debe Ravyanai, Resha, Shemesa, Machmas, Avir. In the Reisha, the animal died because of the Avir. It was neither Huchlaka nor Huchma. There was no slippery slide. There was no overheating. The animal simply died because of the air that it breathed. And in that case, Amrinon, we have a right to apply the principle called Avira de Har Ktola, or Amrinon Avira de Bika Ktola, that the atmosphere, the air that the cow breathes could be reason for its death. It could be that it's the avir of the har that might have killed the animal. It could be it's the avir of the bika. You know, each of these two areas, which are topographically opposites, has its own, you know, atmospheric challenges for the animal. Now, here in the Rishonim, we have three approaches. We have Rashi, and we have Tosfos, and finally the Ritva. Rashi's of the opinion that even though there's no way that the owner of the donkey, the maskir, can say he knows with absolute certainty that the animal died because of the avir, as opposed to the malchamovitz, just it was the end of his time, is nevertheless, even though he has no proof, the socher becomes liable and he has to pay for the cow that died. Which is a very interesting way of presenting it, and this you'll see in Rashi, Dibra Maskil Shemesa, that basically what happens here is that once there was a shinui, and the socher violated the terms of the agreement, the maskir always has the upper hand to assume, or to claim at least, that it was the socher whose shinui caused the animal's death, and therefore he's liable. Tosfos, on the other hand, thinks that the only time that the socher is logical is dafka shiadua sha'oso ayom haya avir mishune baharim yosem ibibika obehepach. And therefore, anu tolim she'im hayim olicha l'makom acher, noach yoser, then the animal would have been okay. So what Tosfos is saying here is that in this case where he switched from Bika to Har, or Har to Bika, the death of the animal is certainly attributed to the Avir. So we can determine with absolute certainty that it was the Avir that killed the animal, and therefore the Shinui is a Trilos of a Sofa B'Pshia. He had no right to change the terms of the agreement, take him the har instead of the valley and vice versa. And we know that the animal died as a result of the avir. And there's a change, there's a different kind of atmospheric condition in the har than there is in the bik, or vice versa. They're two different, so he's definitely chayav. The Ritva, on the other hand, says that we're talking about a case where we don't know, we don't recognize the animal, and we don't know whether the shini avir is a gorim, whether the change of atmosphere could, in fact, cause its death. is Oz Yochel Amaskil Liton, says the Ritva, Ani Yodea Sha'aver Shalahar O Shalabika Mazik Libehema Volachain Hasocher Chayov. So according to the presentation, the understanding of the Ritva, we're talking about a case where we know and we are absolutely certain that there's a Shinui Avir that causes its death. And the Maskids could say, I know that the Avir, the Hara, the Bika would be Mazik the Behem, and therefore the Socher is Chayov. Whereas Tosfos says that we're talking about a case where we know that there's a different Avir between Hara and Bika, but yet we're not sure that it was that change of Avir that brought about the death of the animal. That's up in the air. That's a suffix. Would he have spared the animal its death if he had taken it to the place where the original terms of agreement said he should take it? We don't know. But since we know at least for sure that the Avir killed the animal, as opposed to Rashi, right? In Rashi's frame of reference, we don't even know why the animal died. Here we know the animal died because of the Avir. We're just not sure whether the animal would or would not have died had there been no Shinui. The Ritva, on the other hand, says that we know that it was the Shinui of Avir that killed it, that killed the animal. That's when, and only when, the Maske has a right to say, I know that the Avir, the Har, or the Bika was detrimental to my animal, therefore the Socher is Chayav. Another alternative way of explaining the difference between the first case of the Mishnah and the second is Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina Omar Kigon Shemesa Machmas Uvtzina. The animal died because it was overworked, it was absolutely exhausted by carrying such heavy burdens. And now we can understand why in the Reisha, when there was a Shinui, Lo Licha Bahar, is the Balabais, the owner of the donkey, certainly has a right to claim that climbing up the mountain is a tremendous amount of effort and work and creates exhaustion, and that's why the animal ultimately died. Or in the flip side case, where he was told in the agreement to be molech the animal up the mountain, instead he was molech it bebika. And even though we don't see the animal sweating, and it wasn't a particularly hot day, but nevertheless, the maskir, the owner of the animal, has the right to say that if the animal were taken to the har, then as a result of that unique air, mountain air, it would have given the animal extra power and energy that it shouldn't have gotten, it wouldn't have gotten over exhausted by this work. So sometimes the dafka, it's the har and its atmosphere, its air, that gives new invigoration. And therefore, the maskir is justified for saying that I told you to be molechit in the har, I was afraid it might get overworked in the bikkur, which is exactly what happened, and it died. And therefore, you're responsible. Rava has a unique approach to this Mishnah, and he says kigon shehikisha nachash, the animal was attacked by a serpent and it died. Now, it's very well known, says Rava, that the makom, that the place itself, could cause through the nachash the death of the animal. In other words, Yadua shebemakom shaholach shama socher and mehema mitsuyim nechashim. The socher took the animal to a place where there are serpents. And had he taken the animal to the place that was stipulated in the original agreement, there were less serpents. There was less of a chance that the animal would die by being attacked by a snake. And therefore, Chayav, the maskir has a right to claim that the socher is liable, because he's saying your pshia, your negligence, is what caused the death of my animal. Had you not changed things around, then the animal wouldn't have been bitten and killed by the serpent. The reason why the Mishnah then chooses har and bika is because, in truth, sometimes there are more serpents in the bika, and sometimes there are more serpents up in the mountain. And you'll take a look at Tosfos Divya Maschil Rebbe towards the, actually the last Tosfos on the daf. Again, it's quite a long Tosfos, but at least just this point. Another interesting point that comes up in this Tosfos is that if the animal died because of its work, that's called Mesa Machmas Lach. Normally a socher is potter for Mesa Machmas, but here that he did the shino, he took it in the wrong place, and maybe that's why the animal died, he, the socher, is going to have to pay, he's liable for the animal. And finally, a point here in the Ritva, he says that we're talking about a case where there aren't that many nechashim around, not in the Har nor in the Bikha, but nevertheless the Socher is Chayev because it's Chilasa Bipshi of a Sofo Bionis, meaning that he really was Poshe as far as slipping or as far as the heat is concerned. At the end an Onis happened and the Nochash killed it. And here we have to get into the whole discussion about whether you need Sofo Bionis Haba Machmas Apshia, because again, it's hard to know whether or not, he had he taken it elsewhere as the masker had stipulated, it would or would have not been killed by a snake. But one could say that since at the end of the day it was killed in that particular place because of the circumstance of that particular place, again through no negligence on the part of the socher, but nevertheless the animal was killed by a snake there in the Bikur, there in the Har. And that's why the socher has to pay, because the animal was killed in that place where, and specifically in that place, where the socher took the animal. And that itself was a shinui with the tchilas of b'pshia as far as huchlaka or huchma is concerned. And finally, one last attempt in the Gemara, or presentation in the Gemara, to reconcile the difference between the Reish and the Seif is Rabbi Chiya bar Abba Amar in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, Hamani Rabbi Meirhi. The author of our Mishnah is Rabbi Meir. The Omer Rabbi Meir, Kolamavir al Das, Shel Balabayis. And here we turn to Daf Ayin Chesem Beis Nikra Gazlan, which means that if a person was told within the framework of a certain transaction, a certain agreement to do X, and he violated those conditions, he becomes a gazlan. And that's why he's chayev ba'onsim. Wow. Gzela here. And our Mishnah of Shinui, where the socher was asked to do X by the Balabais, and instead he violated that agreement and he did Y, he took the animal in a different path, he is considered a gazlan under the law of Mishana Midas Balabai Shal Chavero, which is the ruling of Rabbi Meir, Kolamavral Das Balabais. And he becomes a gazlan. Now, if that be the case, we understand very well why the Mishnah in the Reisha doesn't make any distinction between Huchlaka and Huchma, the Chiyuv and the liability of the renter is absolute, unqualified, so no conditions are necessary, to say that he did X or Y, because according to our mayor, he was Mishana Midas Balabais and he's a gazlan. The Seifa, on the other hand, reflects the sheet of the Chachamim, and they hold that Shina Midas Balabais is not Chayev Bionsim, he's not called a gazlan. And therefore, in the Seifa, we have to get into the issue of how did the animal die? Did it slip? Did it get overheated, and so forth and so on. Now, the balance of the sugya here, on the top of Ayin Ches Amid Aleph, and this is going to be a long and complicated piece, is to figure out which statement of Rabbi Meir, out there in Shas, of Mishana Midas Balabais Nikur Gazan, is appropriate and is analogous to our case of Holicha Bahar, Holicha Bebika. Is it the Rabbi Meir of Tzaboy? Is it the Rabbi Meir of Migvas Purim? Which statement of Rabbi Meir? And it could be that only at the end of this very long sugya, towards the end of the Amud, or at least more than halfway down the Amud, will we get a grasp on what Rabbi Meir are we talking about, And where is the Mishana Midas Balabayis, Hamavir El Das Balabayis, that's relevant to our case of Har and Bika? So Mirtz Hashem, Bli Neder, we'll do that in the next year.